Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer, ready to run down what was a busy week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm back from Washington, D.C. with the latest on the farm bill and other priorities from our nation's corn growers. My colleague C.J. Miller is already in Indiana State Fair mode. It's just a couple of weeks away now. He shares the story of one of the biggest attractions of the fair each year. And if you're a cattle farmer, Sabrina Halverson checks in with an update on your investment in the checkoff. Andy Eubank has markets later this segment, and meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast on the way. Let's begin with my trip to the nation's capital, where I joined the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance as they met with other corn and soybean growers from around the country to advocate for better farm policy. Ferdinand, Indiana farmer J.R. Raisner is an Indiana Corn Growers Association board member and a National Corn Board member. He says Monday and Tuesday were set aside for the seven different NCGA action teams to meet and discuss policy priorities. There are seven NCGA action teams.
Currently, I sit on the Production Technology Access Action Team, so we work a lot in the biotech with crop protection, fertilizer, and with some of the stuff we're seeing within the Endangered Species Act. It's part of what my team is handling right now, and so we're really focused on that. We're really focused on, you know, some of the sustainability pieces within that and making sure that the American farmer and the Indiana farmer have the tools they need to produce the crop that the world needs.
The other action teams revolve around ethanol, market development, member and consumer engagement, risk management and transportation, stewardship, and sustainable ag research. Hill visits with congressional staffers took place Wednesday to share about the urgency of getting a farm bill done, among other important topics. More on that coming up. Raisner reminds Hoosier farmers to get involved in the policy process if you're not already.
No checkoff dollars can be used for policy work, so everything we do on the policy side is through our memberships, through sponsorships, and the people that are involved with it are very important. And you know, we realize that not everyone has the time to do it, but just having that membership is key, giving the support to these organizations that can fight for the American farmer. And, you know, when we're together, we have a very loud voice, and it's very important for us to continue to fight for that.
You can learn more about getting involved in that policy process at incornandsoy.org. You can also learn more about getting involved in some of their events, shop talks, and also the Indiana Ag Policy Summit coming up at the end of this month at incornandsoy.org as well. Now, as I mentioned, it wasn't just Indiana out there in D.C. There were corn growers from across the country. In fact, nearly 300 of them took to Capitol Hill on Wednesday to share with staffers the urgency of getting a farm bill across the finish line this year. But time is running out.
We're down to about 50 legislative days between now and the elections. And so in one sense, you know, that's not much time. I think that's the reality.
That's Neil Kasky, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association.
But I would say that if we could help Congress develop the political will to get a farm bill done, there's plenty of time to do that.
House Ag Republicans have already pushed their version forward. It still awaits a vote from the full House. Ag Democrats have yet to move forward in the Senate. When asked what the biggest obstacle is to progress the farm bill, Kasky says,
simple politics. I say simple. I mean, there's nothing simple about just the political world that we're in. But I mean, I think that's, you know, just trying to get people to come together. And we're grateful for all the leadership and the commitment that we're seeing from Capitol Hill. It's just we really need them to come together on a bipartisan bill and deliver for rural America. I know, obviously, Senator Stabenow is sitting in a key spot, and we're grateful for people like her that we know that she wants to get a bill done, and we are ready to throw our collective shoulders behind whatever effort she needs us to do to get something moving on the Senate side. And so we hope that will happen soon.
Obviously, the sooner the better, because as Kasky said, those legislative days are running out before the elections, and a bipartisan farm bill is what's needed. We'll have much more from my trip out to D.C. with the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance, including the corn growers' fight for year-round E15. That's coming up. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast on the way. Right now, let's turn things over to Andy Eubank. It's time to check in on the markets. Andy?
Thanks, Eric. We'll look at Friday markets. We ended mixed after a promising start. Corn, soybeans, and wheat all beginning the day higher. That didn't hold up, though, in the end. Settlements coming up. We begin, though, with market analysis. I grabbed that in the middle of the session from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Brian, through the middle of the Friday session, the grains and oilseeds were really an outlier. A lot of commodities, the equities included, lower, but gains in corn, soybeans, and wheat, although after the middle of the session, we started to see that gain erode in both corn and beans. Why the early movement higher?
Well, thanks for having me as always, Andy. I think we're just seeing some short covering. You know, we anticipate a very large net short position being held by the funds here to be reported this afternoon. And so they're probably just taking a little money off the table anytime you get this tremendous sell-off that we've seen, and notably in corn, beans, and wheat, as you said. Just as you get into a Friday, anything can happen over a weekend, not only weather-wise, but also geopolitically. So, yeah, it just takes some money off the table and get a little bit of stabilization as we approach the second half of corn pollination. That may become more fragile going forward because we're approaching, well, my guess is we'll be over, if we were at 41% this week, well, we are past the midpoint point of nationwide pollination. So, but long story short, I think we're seeing some short covering here. We did see some export news, Andy, and soybeans, soybean meal the last couple of days, a large sale of soybeans to unknown destinations, likely to be China, reported on Thursday, and a soybean meal sale reported, and another soybean meal sale reported here on Friday. So at least end users are at least putting their toe in the water at these lower prices. So maybe that's giving us a little stabilization down here too.
Talk a little bit more about, as you mentioned, pollination, but the weather pattern that we're in right now, very interesting, very comfortable. And what's the impact on that over the next week or two on the markets potentially?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Andy. It's comfortable for people and comfortable, if you will, for corn, because corn loves it to be cool during pollination, a critical time, as your listeners all know. And anytime you get cooler than normal temperatures, not only during the daytime, Andy, but many people will argue that cool temperatures at night might even be more important than cool temperatures during the day. It allows that corn plant to recharge. And history backs that up when you see cooler than normal readings, temperatures during the summertime, not only during the daytime, but at night. There's a pretty strong correlation with high yields. So every year is different. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. But going forward, it looks like it's going to stay cool into the middle of to the end of next week. Then there may be a shift back towards some heat those last few days of July, maybe moving into the first few days of August. We'll just have to wait and see, but that's what the models apparently are leaning towards at the moment. As we go forward then, August is still a critical month, as your listeners know, particularly for beans. So we don't want to make a crop. We can't make a crop of beans here in July. So there's still a ways to go yet as you get into August. The National Weather Service came out yesterday on Thursday, and they said that during the month of August, for most of the Midwest anyway, it's going to be equal chances of above and below normal rainfall.
Market analysis from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. Now, settlements just a little lower in the corn market by the end of trade. September, 390.5, down 3/4. December and March, down 0.25, 404.75 on the Dease. March goes to 418.5. August beans, likewise, just a little lower, 1097.25, 1.25 down. September, 4 cents off at 1036.75. And Novi, 1036 even, 7 cents down. 7.5 up on September wheat, 542.75. Meats mostly higher. August live cattle, 183.10, up 85. August lean hogs, 91.57, up 20. You're up to date now on the markets. I'm Andy Eubank. Much more to come. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Podcasts are everywhere today, but how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture, farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more. can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today podcast network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
Comfortable weather for most of this weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Let's take a look at what's going on across the Hoosier State. After a couple of very pleasant days yesterday and back into last Thursday, we are raising our temperature quotient a little bit here today. But the good news is humidity values still stay in a comfortable zone today. And honestly, I think for most of tomorrow, we do start to see humidity creep up ever so slightly tomorrow afternoon and evening. But this is going to be leading to a very humid and, well, somewhat active week this week coming up. So before we leave the weekend, let's talk about temperatures. I look for us to be easily in the lower 80s with low humidity, good sunshine, some nice breezes. We're going to turn breezes around more to the west and southwest through the weekend. So not an overall bad setup if you happen to have a county fair that you're going to or something else going on. Next week, we are more humid for sure. Very muggy for Monday, especially then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And in that muggy stretch, we are going to be seeing a heat-based pop-up showers and thunderstorms. Not really looking at any significant frontal boundary coming through in the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday time frame, but just moisture. So I think over the three-day stretch combined, let's just go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have to allow for at least a quarter to one and a half inches of rain. There will be multiple rounds of moisture for probably everyone. Once we get into the late Thursday time frame, this moisture will start to die down just a little bit. I think a large part of us are going to be in that half to one inch range next week, with the extremes limited to probably 25% of the coverage area. Now, you get into late Thursday and Friday, the moisture is gone, the clouds are going to be breaking up, and we are going to see a slight respite for just a couple of days, probably Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. Temperatures pulling back a little bit. Humidity values definitely coming down. So it's going to be a comfortable weekend yet again this coming weekend. But as we move into the following week, heat is coming back. I'm looking for a solid surge of heat coming out of the southern plains and west and southwestern U.S. That's going to dominate for that week next week, where we start with 3 days in July and finish with 3 days in August, right? So definitely some heat building in there, not a lot of moisture. I am seeing a significant pullback in available moisture to work with after this Thursday, early Friday time frame. I think we could go from Thursday night all the way through maybe next Wednesday, Thursday with no moisture. And with a lot of this heat, we'll see some very strong evaporation. So net drying starting late this week going through next, at least the way we're seeing things come together right now. A tropical system could change that pretty doggone quick, but right now, not seeing anything of excitement there either. That's a look at your forecast update. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eile Fabrications, made with the best steel, such as Hardox or Strengths wear plate. Eile's steel wear part liners are easy to install and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit at a cost less than OEM replacement parts. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season.
Welcome back. You are dialed in to Hoosier Ag This Week. Maybe you're tuning in at HoosierAgToday.com, maybe on the free HAT mobile app, maybe on one of our over 70 great radio stations across the state of Indiana. However you're listening, thanks for joining us. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. More now on my trip to Washington, D.C. this past week. Obviously, getting the farm bill across the finish line is priority numero uno for farmers, but corn growers were sure to take the opportunity to discuss other priorities on Capitol Hill as they were there for the annual Corn Congress with the National Corn Growers Association. U.S. corn growers will grow somewhere around 15 billion bushels of corn in 2024, and just under 6 billion bushels of that will go toward ethanol production.
So we already have, through the renewable fuel standard, an E10 level, 10% ethanol blended in every gallon of gasoline. We'd like to see that move to E15 or 15% level.
That's Indiana Corn Growers Association board member and Clinton County farmer Alan Dunn.
That's being held up with some regulations that are different across the country that make it inconsistent on where you can find it and when you can find it. So we're trying to fix that legislatively by introducing a nationwide E15 standard.
It's also being held up in the Senate. The Nationwide Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act of 2023 is a bipartisan bill that's currently stalled in committee. Dunn says allowing year-round E15 will save consumers at the pump an average of 15 cents per gallon, and it would provide the environmental benefits everyone's looking for.
We have the ability to produce a safe and reliable fuel supply that does not require mining of rare earth minerals from some other part of the world or worries about how you're going to dispose of an old battery or any of those kind of problems that we have. We just have a 100% renewable product made from the energy of the sun that is produced here in the United States, and it just seems like a no-brainer.
The frustrating part of this for corn growers is that this should be one of the rare areas where both Republicans and Democrats can agree. Dunn and others shared this with staffers from both parties on Capitol Hill Wednesday.
The economic impacts and the environmental impacts both come together right where we all want to be. And so why are we not moving forward? What is the difficulty? So we tried to point out some of those common sense areas of similar thinking, and hopefully we made a difference.
E15, or unleaded 88, as you might see it at the pump, is approved for use in all light-duty vehicles built 2001 or later. From policy now to the checkoff program. What is the return on investment for the checkoff dollars that beef producers pay? A recent study took a closer look at the beef checkoff investments and came back with some pretty good numbers. Sabrina Halverson has the story.
$13.41. According to a recent economic study, that's the amount cattle producers get back for each dollar they invest into the National Beef Checkoff Program.
Clearly a very, very high ROI, and it was significantly higher than the previous study that I did 5 years ago.
Dr. Harry Kaiser of Cornell University conducted the survey. The study looked at the last 5 years and measured three main points: whether the National Beef Checkoff demand-driving activities increased demand for beef products.
Yes, it had a substantial impact on both domestic and foreign market demand for U.S. beef. More specifically, what I found was, had there not been a national beef checkoff program, per capita beef demand would have been approximately 8.5% lower than it actually was over the last 5 years.
It also looked at the combined benefits of those activities in the terms of their incremental financial impact to beef producers and importers. And third, it looked at the indirect benefits of the National Beef Checkoff demand-driving activities to the broader macroeconomy.
The direct benefits to the beef sector was to add $3.3 billion in farm beef revenue, total revenue that is. And to the broader economy, that $3.3 billion direct effect had a very positive impact on increasing incremental GDP to the national economy of almost $10 billion, increasing the number of workers in the labor force by around 45,000 people, and adding millions of dollars to tax revenue for the government at the local, state, and federal levels.
You can see the full study online. We've put a link on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
All right, Sabrina, thanks. I don't know about you. Sounds like a pretty good investment to me. Some pretty high expectations for this year's corn and soybean crops, especially up here in the northern part of the state.
It's not in the bin yet, but at this point, I would say we have a good shot at probably a record crop in our area.
Benton County farmer Andrew Winger is excited about the potential of his corn and soybean crops this year. Last week brought some heavy rain and wind to some areas of the state, including Benton County. Winger says they got anywhere from 3.5 to 5 inches around their fields, and the winds weren't as bad as they were in other parts of Indiana. The ground took up the 3.5 to 5 inches of rain pretty well last week. Winger says we don't need any more rain anytime soon, but in order to get those record yields he's hoping for,
we need another good rain, probably the end of the first week of August or second week of August, to finish the beans and add some kernel depth on corn. And I think we've got enough moisture to go the rest of the way.
Tar spot has been rearing its ugly head around the state. From a management perspective, Winger is looking at that fungicide pass here pretty soon.
From the people that I work with, they're saying it's probably in every field at some level. Obviously not detrimental levels yet, but anybody's guess, depending on the weather, whether we get there or not. It's a concern. We do some preemptive stuff early to try to keep it at bay the best we can. And like I say, we always plan on a late fungicide pass.
Winger tells Hoosier Ag today that he's, quote, not worried about tar spot, but he's not losing any sleep over it either at this point. He'll be making that fungicide pass for soybeans soon, too. Now, we have had some recent storms and heavy rainfall that have crossed parts of Indiana. They've brought excessive winds, which have resulted in corn being flattened from lodging in certain areas of the state. If you visit HoosierAgToday.com right now, you'll find an article from Dan Quinn, Purdue Extension Corn Specialist, talking about how to assess that corn and what you might do next. Also be on the lookout for a Purdue Crop Chat podcast with Dan Corn Quinn and soybean Sean Castile next week from Hoosier Ag Today. More Hoosier Ag This Week coming up next.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
What are you seeing as the future that we might experience, and where do you see opportunity there?
If you think about them side by side, farmer-focused innovation, food as health, and bioinnovation, the commonality is about innovating at intersections. Intersections of non-traditional domains that we have treated fairly separately in the past. And so you're seeing a convergence of disciplines, of organizational structures, and collaboration that I think is really going to be the way that we have to operate or should be operating in the future. But that really does call into question, do we have organizations and collaborative structures and incentives that are purpose-built for innovating at the intersections?
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. $69.6 billion. Well, that's how much Indiana's ag bioscience sector contributes to the state's economy. And that's according to a new study from RTI International, the details of which were announced this past week during the AgriNovus Indiana Quadrant event in Indianapolis.
The insights from this study show the power of Indiana's ag bioscience economy.
And that's Mitch Frazier, president and CEO of AgriNovus Indiana.
But the story gets even better. As we look at that $69 billion, there are 147,000 Hoosiers that wake up every day, their feet hit the floor, and they are driving growth in the ag bioscience economy, ultimately making it possible so people can eat. And we think about what that really means in the context of this broader economy. Indiana's ag bioscience economy contributes more than almost $23 billion to the state's GDP. That's roughly the same contribution as the auto manufacturing industry.
During the event, he gave a goal for Indiana's ag community to grow the ag bioscience economy even further.
The big ambition for Indiana's ag bioscience economy is to drive $8 billion of growth by 2030. And that really is a function of looking back at how this economy has performed and then realizing that this is going to take all of us. This isn't an AgriNovus target. This is all of us working together across food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, production agriculture, setting our eyes on the horizon and driving growth. $8 billion is a target. I am confident we can get there.
Frazier laid out several opportunities for Indiana's ag leaders to help reach that goal.
The biggest opportunity for everyone to realize that the reason why Indiana has an ag bioscience economy, the reason why we can drive growth in plant science and crop protection and animal health and in food and in ag tech is because of production agriculture. Farmers are at the cornerstone of this economy, and working with them through farmer-led innovation, through bioinnovation, through food as health, this will be the next chapter. And together, farmers working alongside innovators, working alongside big companies and small companies, together we can drive this economy and we can hit that $8 billion target.
You can hear my full conversation with Mitch Frazier from AgriNovus Indiana at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, we're less than 2 weeks away from the starts of this year's Indiana State Fair. And when you think about the State Fair, you often think about the food, the rides, the 4-H exhibits, and the livestock. But one very important piece of the state fair is the Pioneer Village on the northeast side of the fairgrounds.
We feel our job is to educate our community, and it's really a hands-on experience. They can visibly see how agriculture has evolved over the years.
And that's Gary Emsweller, superintendent of the Pioneer Village. He says the goal is to make you feel like you've stepped out of a time machine and into the early 1900s.
It's very easy to see somebody that's working in Pioneer Village all over the fairgrounds because they're in bib overalls or a long dress and an apron around their neck. So, yeah, we kind of stand out. And again, our goal is to play the role of the way it used to be.
In addition to the antique tractors and equipment on display, you'll also see volunteers hard at work at the Pioneer Village.
We have a glass blower. We have a person making soap. A variety of things that not only can you buy, but you actually get to see them making those kinds of things. And again, they come, volunteer their time, maybe make a little bit of money, but they enjoy talking to their customers more so than really trying to sell.
Gary says he and his volunteers are also in the process of building a brand new antique style barber shop.
We've had a barber shop for several years. The young lady comes in, if you want your hair cut, she'll cut your hair. That has been such a big attraction. We're literally building a building outside so she has more space and more visibility to the public. So we're finishing that building up right now. So that'll be new to our Commerce Park out on the east side of the big building. And a second building is a veterinarian clinic. And we will have artifacts that have been donated to us from veterinarian doctors. Old equipment stuff that'll all be labeled. It's just a really neat to see how veterinarians worked many, many years ago. We will have volunteer veterinarians working in there to answer any questions and stuff. Those are two of the big things that will be new for us in Pioneer Village.
Gary adds that one of the highlights of the Pioneer Village is the daily Threshers Dinner.
It is really a spectacle. We feed about 150 of our volunteers every day here, but our first table, you have 15, 20 gentlemen sitting around in bib overalls eating a huge meal with hundreds of people watching us, taking pictures of us. So it's really kind of a unique situation on both sides, not only for the volunteers, but also for the public.
You can hear more of my conversation with Gary Emsweller and read more about the Pioneer Village at the upcoming Indiana State Fair. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, just like Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, we ride off into the sunset as we close out another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.